Blog Talk Radio.
Back in my routine a little bit, but I do hope everyone's doing well. I know that we've all been kicking something around, so, and I have a little bit of a voice tonight, and hopefully it'll make it for the whole 2 hours. That would be a really amazing thing to have up. Anyway, hello Rex, how are you tonight?
Hello, what's doing?
I don't know, I guess time will tell with that one, but so far everything's kind of quiet around here. I like it. Quiet is good, right? Unless it's me, because then it means that I'm out of commission. But, you know, what are you going to do, right? So how are you? How's your weather?
Yeah. 50, but it's wet. Kind of, so it's a little on the cold side.
Yeah, I get that. That dampness, boy, it gets you every time. It was relatively warm today. It's not warm. I mean, we're not going to, like, set any records. But it was comfortable, you know. When I let the dog out, I left the back door wide open and said, yeah, come in whenever you're ready, you know, whatever. And it felt good, you know, nice fresh air. I think, you know, feels like spring is on the way. But, you know, how many times have we had the wool pulled over our eyes? You know, many. I have, anyway. It's good to have you here. It's good to be able to talk a little bit. And I'm kind of. How long do you think it'll last? An hour?
Well, let's see. Will the frog return before the first few days?
Yep. Well, we'll see then, I guess. And just so you know, we do have DW London hanging with us tonight. Hello, Dan, and how are you tonight?
Hi, how you doing? You all right? You good?
Yep.
Excellent.
Right,
good to hear your voice again.
Hi, right, thanks, and you
yeah.
too.
Yep. It's a nice treat, and heaven only knows. I see Naomi, and I see Puddles, and I see Robbie out in the room, so hello, everybody. And whoever... Oh, I don't see that one. You know, this thing, I wish it would refresh like it's supposed to. Story of my life. But
some kind of feedback. Is anyone else getting that?
I'm not.
No. I got that the other night on me.
Yeah. So disconnecting, start connecting.
Right. Oh, okay. I think that DW is calling back. He left.
Okay.
At least I hope he is. So, in the meantime, let's see what we got. We got a nice board of poetry tonight. I'm happy to, to have it all here. It looks good. Nice variation of poets and wonderful works. So I guess, since I'd like to start with you, Rex, I'm going to put up a piece by Jody Melton, and you can kick us off with that one.
All righty.
Okay, and here we go. This is carryover from last week. So here it goes. And the title is, I don't know, Pain, Sweet Pain by Jody Melton. Whenever you're ready, Rex.
Pain, Sweet Pain by Jody Melton. In the depths of life's relentless storm, I dance with pain, my faithful norm. Sweet agony, my constant friend, in the darkest hours, you never bend. We jump through the harshest nights, your presence pain and eerie light, a flicker in my soul's abyss, a testament to life's clear witness. In every wound and broken dream, you've whispered secrets yet unseen, the lessons etched in every scar, a map to who we really are. When life's path took a treacherous turn, I clung to pain and I would learn that in the heart of despair's cruel song, we find the strength to carry on. For when we're deep in the fiery abyss, there's no retreat, we must persist. With courage from pain's embrace, we rise from ashes, find our grace. Through heartache, sorrow, and despair, I found a truth, a love affair, with pain, sweet pain, forever bound, in our enduring love I've found. So remember this tale, remember well, win or lose, time will tell. It's not about your rigid chin, it's about how many times you rise again. Find gratitude in every dawn, it will change all you see. Live your life in love, not fear, make a difference while you're here. No message could be more clear. My hope for you at quitting time, when all will be revealed, is that you look back with no regret and allow your heart to heal. So in your journey, face your pain and know the sun will rise again. May you have clothes for your body and a warm pillow for your head and a 15-minute head start before the devil knows you're dead. And boom.
Yeah.
All
welcome
right,
back.
Gene.
Yeah. Welcome back to DW.
Cool.
This is a great poem by Jody. He's a wonderful rhyming poet. And he changes it up a little bit as we go through this piece. And I like that. It adds a little diversity to the read. I do like the beginning is, in the depths of life's relentless storm, I dance with pain, my peaceful norm. Sweet agony, my constant friend, in the darkest hours, you never bend. That's just one of many good stanzas throughout this poem, I have to say. He speaks his mind well in his poetry, and I like that about him. When he gets a subject that he wants to write on, he can nail it very well. So thank you, Jody, so much for sharing with us, and this is a great piece, and I appreciate it very much. So thank you.
Thank you, Jean. DW, did you get to do that by chance?
Uh-oh.
Maybe.
Are you on
mute, Dan? Well, I'm having some technical issues at the moment. I'm having, all I can hear is like buzzing sound. I'm going to try rebooting my computer and come back.
Hang on one second. Let me see if it's coming from one of us. So hang on a second. Okay, I'm going to mute myself, so give it a whirl. See if it works for you.
Yeah, that worked.
Oh. Excellent. Glad to have you back, DW.
I can hear better now. Yeah.
Hold on. This piece by Joni, Pain, Sweet Pain, it hits on that idea of embracing everything and anything that you come across in life. It's like that song by Zeppelin off that first album, Good Times, Bad Times, you know, I've had my share. It's that idea of embracing all those moments that meet you head on in life, because those are the moments that make the true essence of a person in the long run. And how one is formed within those moments, how one moves on from those moments, and even with the scars and with the tears and the happiness that grows with it, you got to learn. You can't go through life without a little bit of pain. So rather than run from it, you embrace it, and then you move into the next angle. And I did like that comedic finish to this piece. For your body and a warm pillow for your head and a 15-minute head start before the devil knows you're dead. Nicely done there, Jody. Touch of humor to finish out. You back, Gene?
No, I didn't go far. I just muted myself. But they're saying that the sound stopped when I did, so I'm gonna hang up and call back. Just, you know, Zach is on the board, so I don't want to leave you hanging like that. And I'm going to put on an audio that I have. So this is another carryover from last week. And this piece is by Scott Sharp. So I'm going to put that up, and I'm going to hang up and call back. So here we go. Here's the poem. And here's the audio.
The Battle of Shiloh. North of Savannah, near Pittsburgh Landing, 3 miles from the log cabin church at Shiloh, dotting the countryside, blue patches lie strewn in the tall fescue grass. Bundled bodies scatter like matchsticks, hanging fire till morning ignites the flame. A forest stiff in early April frost prepares the plots of boys and bayonets. Sundown and troops sprawl near the scrub brush and winter beach. Only 2 miles on, the gray fog of Confederate uniforms huddles under rifle smoke, crawling in fear, whispers hushed by dark woods and moonlight bayonets stabbing the darkness, awaiting the drummer boys' pounding heartbeat, beating, breaking stillness, breaking light, calling soldiers, boys on like magnets in search of lead, pulling brass buttons on winter coats to the cold, unforgiving winter ground. Rising to a slow drumbeat, a morning breeze shivers in time. Peach blossoms stand up above the fray in an orchard with peach fuzz and dew on the cheeks on a clear Tennessee morning. Nervous chatter covers packing of powder and gun barrel eyes, bloodshot and open wide. Teenagers ready themselves near sunken road, abandoned wagon trail, rutted dirt path, worn like a general's face. Etched lines of war cut deeply into the brown face of the earth. Mangled landscape of death, ready-made fighting ditch, ready-made grave, the hornet's nest dug out by artillery rounds. Shovels sharpened cuts the barren ground, putting bodies in. Grave nation, grave time, covered with flowers of peach trees, increasing. The drummer's beat quicker and quicker. Each side charging the other. Gray and blue eyes closing. Bodies dropping to the pounding beat, to a knee and face down into the dirt and the dust of a nation's history.
Great read, Scott. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. Dan, why don't we start off with you, please?
Hey, I thought this was great. Vividly kind of describes the brutality of war and all the perils that come with that, you know, and the imagery in this is off the scale, really. It's really deep and so much going on. It gives you so much detail in your pictures in your mind, you know, like you're there, you know, when it's like you're at the battle, in the middle of it, you know. Anyway, yeah, that's what I think.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I got that very same feeling. There was enough a detail and description that gives you that note of actually seeing the imagery drawn forth across your mind as you read on. And yes, the bleakness, the darkness, the horror, you can't imagine on such a ground without actually knowing it for sure. And yes, most of these were teenagers. Even the drummer boy, they were usually 12-year-olds. So a hard time and definitely hard thoughts when it comes to battlefields. Nicely done, Scott. And Gene, what about you? Are you there? If not, maybe.
I am. Yes. I tied up a couple loose ends at the same time. I love Scott's historic work. When he points at different battles, different situations throughout history, he does a wonderful job with that, and this is no exception to that rule. So, excellent piece, Scott, and thank you so much. Great audio, and I really enjoyed the piece. And I think we have Naomi with us.
Naomi,
is that you?
Hello, hey. Of course it's me.
Welcome.
Hello, everybody.
Hey.
Hello.
Oh, that's there too. Oh. Hey. Did you get to hear that back then?
I did.
Cool. What'd you think?
Oh, I thought it was wonderful. The Civil War reenactment had a grotesque war imagery, great references to the Peach Orchard, Sunken Road, Bloody Angle, the Hornet's Nest. And I wish I could see just like Nathan Bedford Forrest kind of gallivanting around with blood in his boot, you know. I thought that's a really cool way to frame the Battle of Shiloh, and there's really no winner there because pretty much the entire pretty much equal sides or equal numbers died on both sides that battle. So I guess they named it Shiloh because of the river, I think, the river that the Union won. And they would have named it the town after the town at the Confederacy one, something like that.
Great. Thank you, Dan. What about you, Naomi?
Oh, wow. You know, this is I read over it. You know, this is amazing. The imagery, the vivid imagery, it just takes you to the place. And, you know, the poor little drummer boys, like you said, Rex, you know, that were, you know, like really young, and you can really feel all their fear in this, you know, war that was fought, and all the bloodiness of it, and all the desperation, you know. And I think Scott did an awesome job, you know, recounting this. Just amazing.
All right. Thank you, Naomi.
We're coming back to you.
Alrighty. Well, Naomi, I'm going to ask you to read this piece. I'm going to try and salvage a little bit of my voice, so I appreciate it if you would. This is Cycles by Jessica C. Wheeler. ICL.
Okay. Cycles. A deep breath of crisp October air fills her little lungs as day dips in the distance. Leaves tremble and they fall from trees onto the path. She grows before my eyes, deciding she'll not follow. Shedding extra wheels, she wobbles into balance, soaring on tires of two across an autumn's canvas. Hours slip away from this with the sun. A watching moon appears. She rides across the stars upon a brand new cycle. End poem.
Great read, Naomi. Thank you very much. And Zach, why don't we start with you, please? What'd you think?
I love, like, first off, the alliteration of little lungs. Kind of like, you kind of tell, brings like a childlike perspective to the piece. And the swirling nature, kind of like, you can see the child being dwarfed by all that. And, like, setting extra wheels, that reminds me of, like, a child that just lost their training wheels, just becoming larger and growing up. Growing up and starting new cycles. Well done.
Thank you, Zach. And DW, how about you?
It's just a beautiful poem, isn't it? Just like describing like a kind of iconic moment in their life, you know, like the whole learning to ride a bike thing, you know. And yeah, I thought it was a beautiful, beautiful poem. It kind of had some undertone for me as well, like almost like maybe like they might be a bit sad that their kid's growing up so fast, you know. I don't know. Kind of what I got from it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dan. Naomi, you got to read it. How about you?
Yeah, you know, this is you just feel the, you're swept up into a child's imagination here, you know, as she's riding like a bicycle across the sky. And I get what DW's saying, you know, there's kind of like a melancholy twist to this poem that, you know, the loss of innocence of a child here a bit, you know, you feel it in the poem. I don't know, maybe it's the trembling of the leaves as they fall and, you know, she decides not to follow. Shedding extra leaves, she wobbles into balance, soaring on tires of two. You know, so she's maybe losing those training wheels as she's growing up. And, yeah, wonderful, right, by Jessica C. Wheeler, for sure. She really makes us soar in this, right, really makes our imagination take flight. So beautifully, beautifully done.
Nice. Thank you, Naomi. You're right, there is a touch of melancholy. You hit that note of a deep breath to start with. Then she grows before my eyes, deciding she'll not follow. There is that note of taking one's own path. Shredding extra wheels, she wobbles in the balance, throwing on tires of two across an autumn canvas. That hits on those notes of, milestones as you watch your child grow from their first words, their first steps, then on the bicycle, then freedom on that bicycle. Because once you get off those training wheels, there's that implied note of moving on by themselves, because they no longer need that helping hand to help drive themselves forward. And then the back end, she rides across the stars upon a brand new cycle. That is implicit too. That kind of hits the idea of the finality of motherhood and watching that daughter move into the world on her own. So great piece there, Jessica.
Absolutely. Great piece. Okay. Now, the next piece I'm going to put up, I believe I do have an audio for this as well. So, this piece is by Puddles 33. And, God, they say your thing is back? I don't know. I was talking about buzzing sound again. I was just ready to cry. Okay, well, next piece is called The Labored Birth of a Mom by Puddle 33. I have an audio for this. So here we go.
The Labored Birth of a Mom by Barb Christing. Push, baby, push. I see your crown. My husband's voice I want to drown. It's you that's caused this splitting pain. Say one more word, I'll bash your brain. Hush now, princess, you don't mean that. Contractions turn me to a cat. I scratch and claw his offered arm. Although his wife, I lose my charm. Each tightening pulse he wipes my face, and in return to my disgrace, I curse and slap and run amok. I call him things. I am a schmuck. For hours we banter back and forth. My ache is south, my tears are north. One final push cries, pierce my heart. Then I hold you, I fall apart. That wondrous day so long ago made me a mom, and you should know I'd go through all the screams once more. But your poor dad's scarred to the core.
Great read, Bob. Thank you very much for the time clock. Much appreciated. All right. You're giggling there, Naomi, so you get to lead off on this.
Oh, this is great. Oh, my gracious. Yeah, I can just, you know, remember when I, you know, some of my, I had four. I went through this four times. Well, the last one I had an epidural, so it was less bad, but the three first ones, it was natural births, and oh, my gracious, yeah. Push, push, and you just want to scream, you know, shut up. Oh, she did it on the SoundCloud. Oh, my gracious, you know, the voice in the SoundCloud, Barb, this is amazing. Totally. You really totally captured the whole moment. And, you know, and the ending was so touching, too, you know. And to end with, your poor dad scarred to the core. It was the end on that funny note. It was just absolutely brilliant. So thank you so, so much for the laugh.
Nice. Thank you, Naomi. And Dan, how about you?
Oh, man, I don't know if you heard, but I, like, laughed out loud at that, I'll bash your brain. Did you? this reminds me of, there's a famous American comedian, but I can't remember her name, like, she talks about her husband all the time. It reminds me of that a bit, like, it's funny, you know? It's like, it's a good comedy look at something that's quite serious in a way, you know what I mean? And yeah, I liked it. I liked the comedy edge on it, and it actually made me laugh out loud. So, yeah, brilliant.
Excellent. Thank you, Dan. Zach, how about you?
Well, it reminded me of, I guess, sort of my own experience as a C-section. So, very visceral. Just brought me, like, thinking about that a little bit. I guess you'd call it a flashback in a way. It was a very visceral and evocative imagery with a very, you know, about as bloody as it gets.
Thank you, Zach. Yes, it did walk that note of reality. The humor in it was perfect because you don't look on with humor in the moment, but there is a note of the back end where you can kind of laugh at yourself because it kind of hits you with those notes of where the demons are let loose, so to speak. And you tell me to push once more, and I'll rip your arm off and beat you to bloody well death with it. I'll tell you what, Barb handled this quite well while exposing the both the beauty and the pain in natural childbirth. So, well done, Barb. Thank you very much. And Jean, we're coming back to you. Gene?
Hey, you wanted me off mute this time?
Oh,
God. Here I go again.
You fixed it.
I was muted, so I don't know if it's really me or not me or whatever.
It's fine now.
You're clear without that hum in the background.
That's so strange. I don't know. I don't know what I did, but whatever works. Buttles, I think you did a great job with this. I thought it was an excellent take on the experience. I love to know the humor in the piece, and it was well done and enjoyable. Yeah, I like that very much. Now, let me see.
One thing. When my girlfriend had my son, she broke two bones in my hand, two of the little small bones in my hand from holding my hand. She was gripping my hand so hard. I actually had two little fractures. I had to go for plaster on it and all that. Yeah.
Oh, my gracious. Oh, wow.
I wasn't too far off with ripping your arm off and beating you to death with it.
Yeah, it was pretty much close. Barbarian. You know, from that.
Yeah. I tell you, it's one of those experiences. Yeah, see? So you have your own childbirth story now. Pretty good, DW, very good.
Everyone's supposed to be the best thing in your life, but it's not. Trust me, it's horrendous.
Yeah.
It is quite different.
Yes. It's just one of those extremely painful things, and then when it's done, it's done. You almost forget it because now you have this whole other world to deal with. It's kind of amazing. Pretty clever.
And we do it again, huh?
That's because, you know what? I think that's because once you're done with the labor and you have this baby in your arms, you say, yeah, that wasn't so bad, you know? And then there you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Until that 6 months later, you find out you're pregnant again. I'm taking an epidural this time, MF.
Hey, I'll tell you what. My first baby, I had natural. My second baby, I had a C-section. My third baby, the doctor says, do you want an epidural? And I said, no, I'm doing fine. He said, okay, he broke my water, and he didn't even make it to the door. I said, wait a minute. What was I thinking? I'm no hero. No, come on back. Do that. I did. I'm like, what am I doing? No. Yep, that was pretty, I don't know what happened, but I thought, Lord.
I had a blast on the old gas and air in there. It was great. It was nice.
Yeah. I'll see y'all. He's funny. Okay, I'm going to try and read this one see how far I get with it. This is called Dance to the End by Random Dot. Okay. The siren sings to the wayward crowd, a musical tune unheard, a seductive serenade played to the stern stomping brigade. Madness, the only sound heard. The courtyard thrumming with movement, a frenzied dance of desperate demand. Whirling and spinning, it was only the beginning. She couldn't resist her need to join in. She was lost in the dance of her brain. Yeah, the call of restless spirit gave her being in motion with blindsided devotion, dancing until her feet bled, until she lay on the cobblestones, trampled, complete. End poem.
Great read, Gene. Thank you very much. And Zach, why don't we start with you?
Sure. It just reminded me of dancing at the end of Midsommar, Ari Aster's second film, when all the women were just dancing feverishly to the beat of like the drums and mushroom tea, not almost to death, I guess, in a way, until they puked. Not quite to death, but very similar sort of sentiment there. Just brought back to mind that particular scene and in a different way. Well done.
Thank you, Zach. And Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, well, I was just reading through the AN here, and you know, wow, they danced and they could die from it. They danced for 60 days. Oh my gracious! You know, this was a phenomenon that happened in the Middle Ages, dancing plagues, they called it. And, you know, I think the Random Dot captured it so well. Yeah, the call of a restless spirit gave her being to motion with blind-sighted devotion, dancing until her feet bled, until she lay on the cobblestones, trampled, complete. Wow. Yeah, very, very visceral and, you know, vivid imagery in this one. Very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Naomi. And Dan, how about you?
Me?
Yes.
Oh, I thought it was great. The comparison of the siren to a restless spirit as well. And this phenomenon, this is like, I've never actually heard of this. Crazy, isn't it? But like, it could be, you know, like, there may be things that lived in the past that have gone extinct. Maybe witches were actually real, but they actually killed them all off. You know what I mean? Or, you know what I mean? Maybe there was real things like that. We don't know. Do you know what I mean? Maybe they've gone extinct. You know what I mean? Or maybe they're still there, but they're more clever now. They don't show themselves to us anymore. You know what I mean? Maybe.
They just hide.
Yeah.
Well,
it really makes you think, this poem, you know? It just like really gets the old juices running in the brain, doesn't it? This one.
I got that as reading. I was thinking about what Dot put in their AM before I got to the end stuff. I knew about this story. And I always thought it might have been brought on by, they call it mass hysteria amongst other things. But back in the day, when you got that first frost that hit the rye grains, you got a fungus that grew on the rye. And almost, yes, but the fungus that grew on the rye was called ergot, which was LSD was eventually brought out from the ergot itself. I was sure that might have been a contributor to this.
So they were just all ripping their bollocks off.
The source of the werewolves and all of that might have derived around from that time because of the ergot, which got baked in, was heavy on bread back then, and rye bread would have been the note to something they'd ate every day, even during Rose's festival. So I could look on this and say, hey, that sounds like ergot poisoning, where you just keep going and people did die. So
I want that to be true.
Nicely done, Doc. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Come on your way, Dean.
Okay, do it.
So I want the magic mushroom thing to be true.
Yes.
Not me.
Okay. Well, the next one in line is also another one with a SoundCloud, and this is by Titus Llewellyn, and it's called Love Would Carry Us Home. And that was the word home at the end of that sentence. Good gosh. Rex, I didn't make it an hour. Okay, here we go. Here's the poem, and here comes the audio. Right here.
Love would carry us home. The innocence of youth, early adulthood, connects me to some fabricated fairy tale, the ale sobriety that of Red Riding Hood, or Hansel and Gretel, the loss would prevail. They'll search for those happy ever afters, during which time to aid a soul search well, it might naively place the many laughters aimed at my expense, the outcomes do tell. There are wolves and witches among you, accompany my every move, except that is my death. It would enable my freedom to give up any happiness. For what, the abyss? During my lowest point, a mouse of a man, he stumbles upon what is an inopportune moment, one that will prosper for certain, to maintain time for which one is immune. Having turned again, fate would flash back to a time of innocence. Fate, its first cause, underlying issues, would ultimately go back to a time of uncertainty, presenting a pause. Your carriage await ye. A patience of a saint. A journey of many years, I trust it will carry the memory of your time with her as faint, to take the place of others before you marry. An acquaintance is such as his to oversee the forfeit of the words. These emissaries have sworn allegiance. to help seek the key to eternal joy. Poets do keep as luminaries, the furry godmother is love who will abide time between the years before she appears. Your words will have enriched to a confined a love, besides togetherness will add years. Whereas the written word has taken place, love in wait, while time itself will proceed at that point, a grave concern will surface your needs to come face to face indeed, moments of a lifetime I have written, to exceed all fantasy with you my now wife, the romantic at heart now soft as a mitten. What was never enough is larger than life.
Great read, Titus. Thank you for the SoundCloud. Very much appreciated. And Naomi, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, what a wonderful, beautiful, romantic write, eh? You know, it takes us, you know, a marriage that takes him back to the time of fairy tales. And you know, I was thinking he mentioned Little Red Riding Hood and Hansel and Gretel, but I was thinking, you know, part of it, you know, with the fairy godmother and everything, I was thinking of Cinderella all through it. Yeah, you know, just the beauty of it, the classical feel also that Titus always gives to his poems. You know, the elegance, the pure elegance of the whole rite is just amazing. And yeah, and you know, the ending, to exceed all fantasy with you now, with you my now wife, the romantic at heart now soft as a mitten, what was never enough is larger than life. Just beautiful and so romantic and so such a loving poem.
Thank you, Naomi. And Dan, how about you?
I thought this was a brilliant poem to have after the last one. You know, with the references to witches and wolves among you, and I think they flowed very well together back to back to start with. The poem itself is really great. The Black Forest in Germany is it's a really well known place. And on Halloween they have massive parties there. It's got, the Germans call it the Schwarzwald, something like that. Schwarzwald, I can't pronounce it, but yeah, they have big parties on Halloween. It's supposed to be haunted, the forest, you know. And then this poem brings together the haunted forest, the reality of that, and the and the fairy tale element, so it's bringing kind of fiction and non-fiction together in one piece. It's very great imagery and everything as well. So yeah, this is amazing.
Nice, thank you, DW. And
sorry,
Dean,
did I interrupt you there? Sorry, I didn't mean to.
Oh no, not at all.
You're good. Yeah, I thought there was great imagery and metaphors throughout this. I love the fairy tale references. I thought they were well handled. Excuse me. Wow. It was beautifully written and recorded. And thanks for sharing with us tonight, Titus. Appreciate it very much. Great job.
And Zach, how about you?
All the mystical, magical imagery with the locks and the keys and the opening of hearts brought to mind the video game series Kingdom Hearts, especially Disney and Square Enix. Just brought back that kind of nostalgia of running around and doing Disney things and Final Fantasy things. So that was very cool. I thank you for that.
Great. Thank you, Zach. That opening note, the innocence of youth, early adulthood, connect me to some fabricated fairy tale, their ale sobriety, that of Red Riding Hood or Hansel and Gretel, a loss would prevail. Their search for those happy ever afters, during which time to aid a soul which, well, it might naively place in many laughters aimed at my expense. The outcomes do tell. He hits on that idea of youth, the innocence, and then moving into adulthood when the innocence is lost and those dreams that one hits upon. But he also hits on the note of aimed at my expense, the outcomes do tell. Hits on the idea of the pain that accompanies that, because those certain sections of life you think are to be yours at a particular moment don't materialize. The wolves and witches among you accompany my every mood, except that it is my death that would enable my freedom too. Giving up any happiness for what? The abyss? And then this one right here. During my lowest point, a mouth of a man, he stumbles upon what is an inopportune moment, one that will prosper for certain, to maintain time for which one is immune. And he talks about the passage of time. And that being mouth of a man, the thought of thinking himself a bit smaller than he actually is in the moment. But then again, he rolls into this note of a marriage before you marry. So even though it might have taken a bit of time before that magic in the fairy tale ending came along, he has found that magic and that fairy tale ending within the back end of this to exceed all fantasy with you, my now wife, the romantic at heart, now soft as a mitten. What was never enough is larger than life. That idea of actually coming into and finding that note of perfect harmony within oneself and one's environment and love itself. So, well done, Titus. All right, Jean. We're back at you. Oh, Eugene. Are you mutating? Uh-oh. Did we lose Gene? Eugene, are you there? Oh, maybe we did. Let me go see if I can find something. Now you're back. Hi, Jean. No, yes, maybe. But you gotta come off your mutation so we can hear you.
You dip the tip of your toast in egg yolk and I watch as it slides from your lip and runs down your chin onto your collar, leaving a sliver of bright yellow on your white shirt and against the dreary bleak sky that blends with snow stretching for miles and miles as we sit in our skimmed milk, decaffeinated morning silence bouncing off the whiteness of kitchen walls, so smothering and shattering. I wish we'd drop a cup, a plate, a fork, a damn knife, sending it clattering to the floor. And perhaps one of us would finally get to say some kind of I'm sorry.
Great read. I don't know. Great read there, DW. And Naomi, thank you very much for the sound card. Much appreciated. And Zach, why don't we start with you?
It just kind of, it's like a grotesque breakfast. Like you're just kind of vaguely chewing these eggs and running down your face, grotesque. And it's like the whiteness of the kitchen walls kind of match the eggs. A decaffeinated morning, like very, very cool turn of phrase there. Smothering, shattering, dropping like a cup, cutlery just clattering to the floor. And then sorry or not sorry, who knows? I thought it was all done.
Hello.
Thank you, DW, I know you read this. What do you think?
It's great. It speaks to me of, I don't know if I've got it completely wrong or what, but it speaks to me of kind of like the morning after an argument with your missus, you know what I mean? Like where you're kind of having that awkward breakfast, you know, and you're a bit still fed up with each other, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know, it kind of, yeah, it screams of that to me. I don't know, I'm not really sure. That's what I got from it anyway.
Nice. Thank you, DW. Gene, how about you?
It all depends on if you can hear me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, for some reason the Direct Connect cut out, and I can't get back on it. So you're stuck with me on my lousy phone now. Lousy phone, lousy voice. So here I am. Naomi, I thought this was
right,
a great piece. Right. Really, really well expressed and described all the way through. I wish we'd drop a cup, a plate, a fork, a damn knife, sending it clattering to the floor. Then perhaps one of us would finally get to say some kind of I'm sorry. I think you ended that beautifully, because I get it. You know, sometimes the silence is just so loud, you just can't get past it. But nicely done, and a great recording, DW.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nicely said, you. Naomi, I go along with Dan's thought on this. It is about relationships. I go a bit further. This kind of hits on that note of a relationship that is deeply soured, because you hit on that note, the skim milk, a sliver of bright yellow on your white shirt and against the dirty bleach sky. There's something really heavy in that note of thought there, as well as the need for some kind of sound, breaking a cup, a plate, or dropping a fork or a knife on the board, something to offer up a bit of sound in the moment, because the thickness of that which stands between the two in that moment is drawn heavy. And so it is that you've gone through so many years, maybe, or maybe the trials and tribulations that you've endured have drawn this wall between the two. And even though you live as a man and wife, you're actually nothing more than roommates, because everything else is lost in between.
Absolutely.
Oh, I was actually disgusted with him. It's in the first place, like, she's disgusted watching him, isn't it? It's kind of like the egg dripping down, and you know what I mean? It's like when you get to that point where you're so fed up with another person, I think we've all been there at some point.
Absolutely. Great comments, everybody. All right, Jean, coming back to you.
Okay, I'm going to try it again. Can you hear me? Yes, hope so.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Naomi, just so you know, you have two great comments in the room, one by Puddles and one by C.L. Howard. Just really, yeah, everybody really loved that. The next piece I'm going to put up is called I Walk Alone, and they're song lyrics by Buddha. So here come the lyrics, and I have an audio night. I like it. Here we go.
Alone on the west stone that gathers cold.
wonderful song there, Buddha. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Naomi, let's start with you.
Oh, I'm so happy you're going to start with me because I really like this. I hadn't heard a song from Buddha for so long, and wow, you know, this is just amazing. I like how he starts out right away with a metaphor. You know, I walk alone on the wet stone that gathers old. You know, like a wet stone that gathers moss and, you know, old grass or stuff stuck to it. His life, he gathers the old, he gathers the memories of the yesteryears. Just love that metaphor. And through the laughter and the tears, I stand alone on the cliffs of nevermore. The lyrics in this are just absolutely so amazing, so profound. There's a journey of going through life alone here and bouncing back and fighting and finding his way. Just a wonderful, wonderful lyrics and a wonderful song.
Nice. Thank you, Naomi. And Dan, how about you? Dan, you got to unmute.
Oh, shit. I'm sorry. Sugar. Sorry. I thought it was really great. Sorry, I was bigging it up there, but obviously I was muted. It's a really good song. I thought that it started off with, straight away, it would set a kind of moody tone, like very contemplative, sort of almost like he's contemplating, you know, and thinking about his life, whatever. And it gets more like, as it goes through, it gets like defiant, you know. You can tell this guy is a fighter, you know, and he's not willing to just let life slap him about, you know what I mean? He wants to be a rebel, you know what I mean? That's what I got from it, anyway.
Wow. Great comment there, Dan. Thank you. Zach, how about you?
This song reminded me a lot of this one song by Caius called Space Cadet off of Welcome to Sky Valley, the Desert Stoner rock band. The lonesome energy was very evocative of the piece, especially standing alone on the cliff of the world, just like this lonely feeling of like in Space Cadet. It's just feeling that you can't be held down. It's just a rebellious sort of feeling to it. And I like the idea of going back home. That's a nice sentiment, and to end on an optimistic note. I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Zach. This does smack of loneliness, sadness, heartache, even a bit of being desperate or desperation in the moment. But what Naomi said about that first, I walk alone on the wet stone, I got a double thought with that one. I walk alone on the wet stone, yes, the wet stone where one slips and falls in on life's travel, so to speak, but also wet stone as a sharpening stone. I walk alone on the sharpening stone that gathers all memories of yesteryear through the laughter and the tears. Just that idea of how stones, not only just offer that note of slippage in the moment when they're being wet, but as the stone is being wet, the stones sharpen themselves. So you got that note of pain also driven out of that first stanza. And then the offers up that, I stand alone on the cliffs of nevermore, though the despot, I rule the nether, invisible it seems, but not to me. He's offered himself up as a despot and ruling the nether. It was almost that note of being death. And then he also draws down into, do you think I just lay down indiscriminately? Like a cat cornered, I will claw back mortally. Careful what you wish for if the anger starts to bleed. Again, I'm going to hit on a touch of death that walks within this too. So,
yeah.
Nicely done, Buddha. Thank you very much. And Jean, for coming to you.
Imagine that. Okay, now I know that Zach and DW haven't read a darn thing yet. I apologize, guys. Not the first one. But I finally got to one of the fellas' pieces, And this is called Rambles Brambles by Olivier. And, Zach, I'm going to ask you to read this one. So here we go.
Rambles Brambles. Rambles, I mean, okay. Rambles, rambles, on and on. About the brambles, on the lawn. Shambles, shambles, rambles, ramble. About the brambles, on the lawn, on and on, and on, and on. And on.
Great read, Zach. Thank you very much. And Dan, why don't we start with you, please?
Well, the brambles are an issue, aren't they? We all know. I mean, anyone who's got a garden knows this, right? You know what I mean? So, brambles, man, everybody hates them. But you do get berries from them, so, yeah, not too bad, right? I don't know. What else is there to say about brambles, really? I don't know. It's a good poem, though. I liked it. It's very kind of humorous as well.
And Naomi, how about you?
Well, I didn't know. I ramble. Yeah, you ramble on. Yeah, ramble, ramble. Okay, get that. Ramble, ramble on and on. But I had no idea what a shamble was until Daniel talked about it. So I imagine it's thorn. Like if I take the image, it's thorny weeds, I guess. But what is it?
Yeah, it can be thorny weeds, but look at it as a patch of raspberries that haven't bloomed, and all you've got is that thorny bush. Those are brambles.
Okay. And, on the lawn, on and on and on and on. Yeah, I laughed when Zach was reading this. I thought it was so entertaining. And also, if I go away in my brain, I can also take the shambles as gossiping, between neighbors, over the lawn. I don't know. That's where my brain took me. Takes me weird places. But, really awesome, entertaining piece.
Nice. Thank you, Naomi. And Zach, you got three. How about you?
I was just thinking about watching these goofy Disney movies or animated cartoons where, animals just go over the fence and stuff and just fight wars or something, little backyard battles. It kind of brings that same whimsy to the piece. Brambles, no one wants those. They're like dandelions. Shambles. Brings him in shambles. The sharp. I thought that was cool.
Thank you, Zach. I like that picture. And from the voice of the officer, I got that note to those children things from back in the day. Mary sells seashells by the seashore. That note to repetitiveness in the language that trips you up.
Tongue twister.
That note to gambling within the brambles of your own voice. So I thought that was pretty cool as well. So thank you, Olivia. And Jean, we're coming your way.
Great. I love this piece. I thought it was so – I love his rhyme and meter throughout most of his poems. But this one was short and sweet and funny, and I do like the image as well. I believe – I don't know if he does or somebody he knows does the images through AI. So they're all somewhat original. Give him credit on that. I mean, I think Olivier has a lot of potential in a children's book. Absolutely. Okay, so I'm out of there. The next piece I have up is... Naomi, I'm going to have you read this one. I hope you can handle it. You got a glass of water handy? Here we go. This is called...
Oh, that sounds like a bad deal.
Oh, boy, I have to read Pam. Oh, my gracious. Okay. So I have to. Origami owls. Origami owls resting regally in autumn air. Life wanders to and fro. Forlorn wisdom floating in will-o'-wisp winds, teetering on the edge of a love song. Made of forest shadows, caressing sugar cane fields, end poem.
Great read, nice. There, Naomi. Thank you very much. And I bet you that actually surprised you because you didn't get anything out, untoward, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And Jean, this kind of looks different for you. You normally expect something horrifying, terrifying, and it's coming out of the woods of Wisconsin.
Yeah. Not really, though. I really don't expect that from Pam, but I know there's always a possibility of it. I thought she did a great job with this piece. It's a great brevity, and I assume she found, maybe this was a contest? Yes, it was a contest. But the image, she wrote to the image beautifully. Very well done, and a lot of fun for such a short little piece. Lots of good stuff. So thank you, Pam, for sharing with us tonight. Hope you feel better soon.
Thank you, Jean. Zach, how about you?
I thought it was cool. It brought to mind of like a landscape that's like not like real. It's like made of paper. Like it says origami owls are paper, then that means everything else must be somewhat, you know, paper, I guess. That's when I kind of got out of it. And like I saw the will-o-wisp kind of like 2D images throughout. Like this one sequence in Ariaster's Boy Was Afraid towards the end. Very cool. It's sort of evocative of that. Yeah.
Thank you, Zach. And Dan, how about you?
I think it feels like the writer's got a sort of affinity with nature, and the origami owl's kind of something delicate that's just there. You know, it's a delicate touch with the, and its symbolism in that is really amazing. It seems to me like a nod to Mother Nature a bit as well. It kind of creates a sort of scene of tranquility. Do you know what I mean? Like I don't know. Sort of a cool scene, and it's really good imagery. Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you, Dan. Naomi, you got to read.
Yeah, you know, there's so much in this little brevity. You know, the origami owls resting regally. You know, it takes so much work. I don't know if you've ever made origami. I do it. I do it sometimes. But it's so, it's such a delicate work to do, you know, a folding just properly. And, you know, it's very fun to do, but it's very, you have to have a lot of patience. And, you know, in this rite, she wanders into the wisdom, you know, the wisdom, forlorn wisdom, floating in will-o-wisp winds. So the wisdom coming back to the owls, you know, the wisdom of life that she has there, the life that wanders to and fro in the autumn air. And then, you know, teetering on the edge of a love song. Made of forest shadows, caressing sugarcane fields. You know, that is just so beautiful. Made of forest shadows. You know, there's shadows when you fold down the paper. And it's, you know, it's very, I think it comes back to the art of origami there, the slight notation there. And, but you know, the whole piece is so well thought out and so delicately well put together and so brilliantly, like Pam can do them, and in so few words. So there's a deepness to this poem. Great write.
Oh, nice, Naomi. I think you bit into the wholeness of that piece itself. And she did win gold for this piece. And the note for the contest was, you can write what you want, but you have to start the poem with the letter O. So there comes the idea of the origami owl. Ah, that's a nice touch to start the piece off with. So I think you captured the whole idea within your comment there, Naomi. So well done. All right, Jean, we're coming back to you.
Thank you, Doug. Well, DW, I have one for you next, and this is called In Life by C.L. Howard. So whenever you're ready.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is In Life by C.L. Howard. I was a stone, standing tall in the river, mighty, unmovable, resolute. Time was a mason, and water was his tool. Day after day, year after year, I stood in that brook, and the water parted around me. I was strong and unbending, he patient and unyielding. But bit by bit, removed my edges, softened my form. Sharpness faded and fell away, yet I stood strong and sure, and the waters continued to part around me. I was eternal. When the water was high, I moved not an inch, and when it was low, licking at my feet, I laughed at its weakness. What seemed like eons passed, and as it did, I began to stare into the stream before me. Littered beneath the swirls and shimmerings of the wet were innumerable pebbles. Sleeping in its deep, their voices beyond my hearing. One day the sun came and stood behind me. I saw myself dancing on the water's face, smaller now, smoother, less and yet somehow more. I could feel myself moving, searching for my place among the brethren. Beneath the waves, beyond time, behind me I hear a crash. Another stone had tumbled into water. He was mighty and proud, unmovable, resolute. I smiled as I heard the master's tool caress his edges, and I wished him well as I stepped into deep, taking my place among my brethren, for I could hear them now, and they have much to say. And so.
Great read there, Dan. Thank you very much. And Zach, why don't we start with you?
Just brought to mind metaphors of like stones, sharp jagged stones becoming smoother by through time, sort of like as one grows, I guess, becoming more smoother, almost malleable by the forces of nature. And I thought that it was very cool to kind of like join the brethren, as it were. There's a kind of a solitary existence for that stone, but to kind of like drop in among other stones, I thought that was cool, and it kind of brings to mind that colorful image, the background. That was really cool.
Excellent. Thank you, Zach. Naomi, how about you?
This is just absolutely amazing. Oh, my gracious. You know, the profoundness of this and the creative brilliance of the whole piece, you know, in this extended metaphor. You know, I was a stone standing tall in the river, you know, as you are, you know, you think you're all mighty and strong, somebody important in society and life, you know, especially when you're a teenager, you think you can take on the world. And then as you grow up and life shapes you and rounds out your rough edges, and, you know, you fall and you get up again, and you know, the life just, you know, takes control of you. And and then you get that wisdom, you know, those rough edges get smoother, and you finally find your place, and you get you fall, like he says, amongst society, among his brethren, among the other pebbles on the river's bottom, their life's bottom, and you listen to the others, you know, what they have to say, because if when you're living in society and you're living in, you know, your life, it speaks to you and it shapes you and it gives you wisdom. So I just thought this was so brilliant. Oh, my gracious. Wow. This is just a wow factor for me, this whole poem. This is amazing.
Nice. Thank you, Naomi. And Dan, you got to read it. How about you?
I think it's a really good poem. It was a pleasure to read, to be honest. And I just want to say great job to C.L. Howard. That was just really amazing. To me, it speaks of I kind of saw something a little bit different in it. Like it speaks of a journey of life, you know, like how when we're teenagers, you know, like we think we're invincible, and we stand tall and we can do whatever we want, you know, and as life beats us down, we get older and we just become pebbles, you know. I felt it had kind of an undertone, you know what I mean? Yeah. Anyway, I like to great.
I think you hit it right there with that note, Dan. Yes, I was struck with the note to it walks in figurative, literal, and metaphorical angles of life, and also walks not in just the note to humanity, but the note to other things in life. The rock is representative of not just rocks by itself, but also the earth. Get with the natural order of what is, because most people don't think of water doing real damage until they've seen massive, massive, massive amounts of water carving out the depths of a valley, which used to be heavily rock strewn, and all of a sudden you see right through the granite. Or you look at the scablands out on the west coast, and you see those furrows of where millions upon millions of gallons or metric cubic feet of water flowed over the land, carving out those spots. So it also speaks to how life changes with the course of action that comes from, whether it's those little bits of water or whether it's us getting more intelligent, a little bit wiser as life moves on in years. But everything is struck by the passage of time. So, well done, CL. Thank you. Jean, we're coming to you.
All right. Well, I have to say I love CL's writing. Excellent reflection on how life smooths our edges and gently humbles us with a soft and steady touch. Because life just doesn't let up. Just keeps coming and smoothing you over. By the time we die, we're well polished for the most part. That's what I'm going to say. Excellent write. Thank you, CL. Okay. Now, the next one I have is called Cobalt Alibis by Errant Panther. And I have an audio for this one as well. So here we go. Rex, get a glass of water while this is playing.
Oh, okay.
Cobalt Alibis by Errant.
Here, let me start it again. I'm sorry. Sorry.
Cobalt Alibis by Errant Panther. There are elements of you, statuesque and noble, despite the bitter insecurity hiding in the shadows just beneath the surface. There are moments your smile changed everything, led you down uncharted roads, but every step was tentative and doubt surrounded you like a winter coat. There have been unwritten sonnets spoken in your name into the prevailing winds, but followed an emotional tirade, love letters that you refused to hear. There is an absence in this wretched heart of mine for not knowing why you've remained noncommittal as your alibis turn cobalt and dry. End poem.
Great read, Aaron. Thank you very much for the soundcraft. It is very much appreciated. Well, it's interesting that this kind of followed CL's, kind of walks in the same notes as learning, so to speak. Naomi, why don't we start with you, please?
Yeah, what a beautiful poem this is by Errant Panther, and, you know, amazing SoundCloud. Talks about love here, right? That's what I get from it. And, you know, love that is unrequited, or is that it?
Unrequited.
Yeah, that's it.
Yes.
It sums it up beautifully in that last stanza. There is an absence in this wretched heart of mine for not knowing why you've remained non-committal as your alibi turn cobalt and dry. What beautiful metaphors those are, you know, turn cobalt and dry. Just an amazing write all the way through. and so well done. And yeah, you know, talks about love, and so many times you see poems about the same subject, but you know, this is really unique, I find, and very creative and well done.
Excellent. Thank you, Naomi. Zach, how about you?
Kind of, yeah, unrequited love, uneven love, especially the love letters that she refused to hear. I found that stung a bit. Just cobalt dry, very kind of like a cold shoulder, almost like being ghosted. It's just a cold, hard pitch, really. I'm sorry, but I want those love letters read.
Thank you, Zach. Dan, how about you?
There's lots of things in this poem, isn't there? It's like strength, vulnerability, it's transformation. It's poignant imagery in there as well. Like, I thought it was a really. I'm still reading it again, to be honest. I really got it the first time.
Yeah, go ahead, Dan.
So that buzzing's back again. I can't really hear you.
Oh, you can finish up. Go ahead.
Oh, it's like that. Sorry, this buzzing's like really like I can't talk. Do you want someone else go? Sorry.
Sure, no problem. Thank you, Dan. I think that third stanza says a lot. There have been unwritten sonnets spoken in your name into the prevailing winds that followed an emotional tirade, love letters that you refused to hear. Kind of hits on that notation of Helen of Troy, the face that launched a thousand ships, so to speak. And that note to the last stanza itself, there's an absence in this wretched heart of mine for not knowing why you remained non-committal as your alibis turned cobalt and dry. Oof, there's a coldness in those last couple of lines. That note to being non-committal hits on the idea of being aloof and not wanting anything to do with. And the alibis angle kind of hits me up with the idea of lies. Even though there might be alibis, they could also be born out of lies themselves. Cobalt hits on the idea of cobalt blue, the note of being blue, but also the thought of being steely and cold, as well as the dry note to again that aloof nature of who he's talking to in the moment. So thank you, Aaron.
Yeah,
and we're coming back to you.
Okie doke, I'm gonna try and keep my buzz into my stuff.
Oh, sorry. Is that you?
No, that's okay.
I
understand.
I thought it was my headphones. I don't know.
It could be me. People said more than that about me, GW. Let me just tell you.
I was trying to talk, and it was just like really like going. I couldn't think. Sorry.
Maybe your volume. I don't know. Maybe your speaker.
Volume. I got my headphones too loud, probably. Yeah.
It could be your microphone volume. Maybe your. Or maybe you're too close to the PC. I don't know. I'm shooting it in the air. But could be.
Yeah. Anyway,
okay,
don't let it hold up the show. That's
right. Okay, Rex. The next piece I'm going to have you read, and this is called Colosseum of the Demigods. And this is by Frank. So I'm going to let you pronounce his name properly. Because I did get a message saying you did fine. So here we go. Are you ready?
Colosseum of the Demigods by Laurent Montana. The desultory vagaries of the maniacal populace fervent, induced by stentorian clamors of an intrinsic portent, echoing throughout the porticos and the colossal arches, a zephyr accompanies gladiators onto glorious marches. Elliptical ages of enigmatic personages of crassitude, egregious vainglory in the amphitheatre of vastitude, promenades and podiums of scurrilous collusions, arcades and stones of the deleterious peril of illusions. Hypogeum of the savage beast glare and august domain, corridors of the detestable gates of the predestined terrain, the pompous parade of the opulent and the gaudy gentry, a turbulent and torrid procession escorted by the sentry. Statuaries of magnates of a grandeur instantly imposed, before the virulent arena of skeletons of myths disposed, the seditious thanatopsis of the macabre vision of sanity, masquerading by the chorus pretension of despotic vanity. Biistic and ebullient diffusion in the specious galleries, effluvium of cruel and combatants of genuine memories, chariots of peremptory demise of slaves evanescent, the masks of the executioners with javelins incandescent. The multitude quiet amidst the gentlemen of oligarchy, supreme rulers of a quantum and veritable monarchy, elate entities within the strange nexus of a secret society in the Colosseum of the demigods of quantum iniquity. Ecce ad novum saeculum sequitura ordinum, behold the new world order. And poem. Well, that wasn't so bad. Dan, why don't we start with you, please? Dan, you there?
He dropped, Rex.
Oh, he dropped. Okay, cool. Naomi, how about you? Naomi? We lose Naomi, too?
Oh, no. No, she's still here.
dropping like flies.
Oh,
all right, Zach, why don't we start with you? Everybody else is gone.
Sure. All right. It's like a cool scene brought to life by, like, extremely, like, a voluminous vocabulary, far-reaching, brought to mind, like, the end of Rome and all of its existence, really. Good riddance. Anyway, I thought it was really cool. And, yeah, just opening the doors to the new world, as opposed to, like, the oligarchy and the monarchy, kind of, like, opening those doors to freedom a little bit at the end. I thought that was nice.
Excellent. Thank you, Zach. Jean, what about you?
Well, I think that Frank has such an incredible vocabulary. Oh, my gosh. And a wonderful way with his rights. I mean, this is, I believe, the second part to the one you read last week, is Bliss, I-Bliss, that's what it was called. And it seems as though he's got a series of these, and I think they're extremely well done. He stacks put them in a cover, I believe, just my opinion. But, yeah, just an excellent piece and well-written, and I'm glad he shared with us. It seems that he's kind enough to share all these pieces with us, and I think it's a wonderful addition to the shows. So great job, Frank, and thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Jean. I'm going to go with two things. First off, you look back, he does offer up that note, the Colosseum, the demigods being those who think themselves most august and beyond the realm of everyone else. But within the Colosseum itself, it is that note of giving to the people that which they want in the moment, the urgency of blood damage, while drinking all day and eating all day, and celebrating these notes through, which are supposed to symbolize the idea of what it is to be truly Roman, but yet they offer up those notes of a society that is crumbling through its own excess. And this also kind of walks into today because it walks on that very same note. Society is being brought down brick by brick because of the overextended greed and the nurturing of the insanity that is born upon society as a whole because we've let it go too far. We've been immured by the notes of taking in everything and anything in the moment, in utter thrall and consumption, that we've forgotten what it's really like to live as people instead of those who enjoy death, destruction, and spilt blood. So nicely done there, Frank. Thank you very much.
Okay. So let me...
There you go. Frank says the full screen is just written on a binge.
That's a hell of a binge. The next binge I was on didn't end like that. Just saying. I'll behave myself. Okay, let me see. Oh, wait, they don't call that a binge anymore. They call it a bender, I think. Now listen, he lost DW in his piece. I have his piece up for next. DW, where are you? Oh, we lost Naomi now.
Scooby-Doo.
Son of a gun. What is up with that?
Man.
It's the lateness of the evening.
You know what it is? It's
witching hour.
The direct connect kicked out on them, too, because that's what it did to me at the beginning of the show.
Oh. Oh, yeah. He hit him. Nothing happens when he clicks reconnect.
Damn. Ugh. Well, what do I want to do now? Well, I guess I'll play.
Dance
the
night away.
The ghost in the machine. That's what it is. Okay, now the next piece is called Beneath the Weight of Shadows. And this is by D.W. London. Anyway, timing in life is everything, isn't it? Okay, and I have an audio for this. So, here we go.
I'm lacking the courage to be reckless, fantasizing about cold steel or pills, craving release in darkness, infinite light, a simplistic way to give up the fight. Normal interactions have become pain. I don't want to wake up to do this again. I'm the racehorse whose trap did not open, an hourglass that's shattered and broken. Love passed me by like a train that won't stop. Thoughts keep ticking like an incessant clock. I'm so sorry, but I just cannot cope. I say to myself, daydreaming of rope. If only I could find some bravery to escape this self-imposed slavery. To exit this scene and escape this plane. Just watch my blood drain away with the rain.
Great read, Daniel. Thank you for the SoundCloud. Very much appreciated. All right, Zach, what do you think of this?
Feeling of hard living throughout, circular sensation of living day in and day out. It's just the process of insanity being like the same thing you repeat over and over again with the same results, expecting something different. Very dreary, heavy, depressing, and just ultimate despair throughout. It was really well done.
All right. Thank you, Zach. Gene, how about you?
Yeah, I thought this was just a great piece. A little on the dark side, but it was good. I like that. I'm sorry. I have to pull it back up again. I was floating around. I don't want to lie. Zach, back to your note. That's what I was reading. I don't have one on the board for you. We'll our best. Yeah, it's okay. I just wanted to make sure I said something. So if you find one and put it up, we might get to it. A better chance.
Okay, I have it right here.
Okay, well, just put it in the topic board, and we'll be fine.
Okay.
I think this was just a great piece, and I, as I said, it had a real dark note to it. The image itself is enough to make me go, ooh. You know, love passed me by like a train that won't stop. Thoughts keep ticking like a incessant clock. So sorry, but I just cannot cope. Say to myself, daydreaming, broke. If only I could find some bravery to escape the self-imposed slavery, to resist this scene and escape this plan, just watch my blood drain away to the rain. Definitely a well-written piece. And I think that it does reflect. He has your suicide pain and depression, and I think the piece very much does reflect those three. So the intent was made for Met, for the right itself, and I think, I think that it was a, I hate to say a great take or a wonderful piece or whatever, because it does have that edge to it. But I mean, if you're thinking about someone might feel in it in that instance, this was it was very well, what's the word I want, Rex, very well captured in this piece.
Yeah.
So wonderful job, DW, and thank you so much for sharing with us. Hey, he's back.
Oh, cool.
How did you get
cool.
back?
Yeah.
How did you get back?
I don't know. I just clicked on it again, and it worked. I don't know.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
All right, cool. I like the title, Beneath the Weight of Shadows, and the picture that you brought forth for that. It offers up quite a bit before you even get to your voice there, Dan. So that's a great way of showing where you're going. And I like the SoundCloud was well put together. I like the music. It was ominous in the background. And when you got down to thoughts keep ticking like an incessant clock, I heard that little tick-tock in the background, and that was a nice clever note as well. I enjoyed that. Now, then this one, this second stanza kind of caught me. Normal interactions have become pain. I don't want to wake up to do this again. I'm the racehorse whose trap did not open, an hourglass that's shattered and broken. That note to the racehorse left at the starting gate, the loser, because the trap hasn't opened up. And that note to the hourglass hits at the idea of broken, time scattered in the moment. And I also like the fact that you dropped in cold steel or pills in fantasizing, but you also hit on blood drain away with the rain, a note to another note to suicide, and also the hangman's rope itself. So you've hit on a number of ways in hitting on suicide, but you weren't graphic in its nature, but you offered up the thoughts that might come with someone who's actually walking or treading this very thin line, this edge where they might tip over one side or the other and end up as that notation, so to speak, in a notebook. So the story was cleverly drawn upon, and the SoundCloud was done right, spot on.
Man, you're so observant, man. You really got most of it there. So that's really good. Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you, Dan.
I was trying to capture, the desperation that someone in that situation might feel. I mean, I've never actually been suicidal myself. Like, it's not a real story. It's just I was trying to imagine what it would be like to be that way, how desperate you would feel. And I tried to capture the desperation in the poem, but I don't know if I did it or not. But yeah.
Oh, you did capture that, and you did. Mm-hmm. That's the best thing about writing. You actually got to dip into the mentality as well as the scenery, and you've done both of that. And you hit on that idea without being graphic. You walked that note without offering up the blood, the guts, the gore, which a lot of people might tend to walk with. And you walked on those subtle notes that might drive someone along that road.
Yeah, thanks. That's really good comments. Brilliant. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And Gene, we're coming back to you. As soon as you stop mutating.
Mm-hmm. That always helps. I know. CL, thank you for hanging with us on the board tonight. Much appreciate your company, and look forward to seeing you soon. Night. Okay, now, Zach, we might as well do your piece. It's up on the board. And take it from there.
So this one has to do with the anime / manga, my favorite anime manga series, Berserk. This is the first in the series that I've been writing. So here we go. Worn out, his hanging mother drops from a tree decorated with bodies. Crows peck blood from the leaves, forgotten under blackened boughs. Her son shakes beneath her swaying feet, his purple flesh approaching her black rot. Screams defying the steel breeze, scaring the tempted murderer. A mercenary band scoops him up. Hearing the defying cries within, soon he knows nothing but the sword, swinging a child-sized blade, his only friend, sleeps clutching his sword like a thumb, earning meager scraps from the leader, until that man sells him for unwilling sex, forcing his unspeakable desire. A child no longer reaches for human touch, each pressed against flesh like a brand, until his eyes leak and bug out his head, staring in the darkness, straight ahead, carving scars that cannot be seen. The little boy kills his rapist in battle, loosing a crossbow bolt into his back, slaughters his surrogate father, ranging blind with alcohol, swinging his sword at the child. His first enemy dies screaming. Guts has only began surviving. And poem.
Great read, Zach. Thank you very much. And Dan, why don't we start with you, please?
Wow, this is fucking dark, man. Sorry. This is really dark from the start. Whereas, you know, the hanging mother and, you know, the blood from the leaves forgotten under blackened boughs. This is just dark all through. And then that touch of vengeance at the end, you know, where he kills them. Wonderful dark right there, Zach. This is really good. I like this. It's great.
Thank you, Dan. Zach, I don't know much about manga or anime.
Anime?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know much about anyway, that opening line, born out his hanging mother, drops from a tree, decorated with bodies, crows peck blood from the leaves. That reminds me of that Japanese forest called the hanging forest. The notes, but also the notes of brutality that is born out of the back end of this, a sort of purple flesh approaching a black rock, screams defying a steel breeze, scaring attempted murder. But then again, the pickup in the second one, you get scooped up, and then the evolving brutality that walks within it, the notes of being not just seeing his mother gone, but also the idea of walking into more defilement, so to speak, because you do hit on the idea of that which was done to him as well, and how in the end, after a while, he gets the strength to walk another path, so to speak, with that last stanza, little boy kills his rapist in battle, loosing a crossbow bolt into his back, slaughters his surrogate father. Now, isn't it a surrogate father? The guy who takes him, so you hit on that idea too of a Stockholm syndrome. And then raging blind with alcohol, swinging his sword at the child, his first enemies die screaming, guts has only begun surviving. So it is all about survival and in a world that's cruel, unjust, and does not bode well for those who do not have anybody to stand before and protect them. And Gene, we're coming to you.
Okay. Well, Zach, I think you did a great job with this. Not familiar with the series. I mean, I know of it. But I think that you told the tale well. I would assume that this definitely follows suit. I can see from the other comments. But very well done and nicely. Well, I don't want to say nicely. But, you know, it was well done. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. And it was funny because I'm listening to this and I'm looking at it. I'm going, okay. And all I could think of are the children who really do. Their families get slaughtered. They're taken to be soldiers in different parts mm-hmm. of the world. And so there's a touch of realism in it as well. So nicely done. Well penned. And thanks for sharing.
Thanks.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Okay. So now. That brings me over here to Rex. I'm going to have you read the next one. No. Yes. No.
Well, make up your mind.
I'm trying to figure out how this was going. But I'm going to have DW read this one. This is by Lockdown Marks. I can't remember who was where when I put the last one up. So here we go. So, Dan, whenever you're ready, I put this piece up. It's called Meditate with Your Low by Lockdown Marks.
Okay. I'll probably just make it sound dark. I always do. I make everything sound dark, apparently. So, Lockdown Larks by, Meditating Your Love by Lockdown Larks. In the chaos, we stand alone, unless we sing heartbeat song, until respect is in the backbone, shielding from those who do us wrong. Ganja swirling in the air, keep meditating your love for us to colour everywhere, and we can rise above. In this, is this love whispering affection in every chord, in every line, and don't know mirror reflection. To know our hearts are beating fine, ganja swirling in the air, keep meditating your love, rasta colour everywhere, and we can rise above. Don't just sit there waiting in vain, too soon mists of time swallow you. Gotta get on and ride this train, together we'll get the harmony view. Ganja swirling in the air, keep meditating your love, rasta colour everywhere, and we can rise above. And when the sun is shining, kiss the earth, don't forsake. Humanity can be a silver lining, in it we all have a stake. Keep meditating your love, and we can rise above, yeah? Keep meditating your love, and we will rise above. End poem.
Great read, Dan. Thank you very much. And Gene, why don't we start with you?
I knew you were going to do that. See, I always knew. I think that this is a great piece by Lockdown Larks, and a great tribute to Bob Marley. Is this love whisper and affection in every chord and every line? Don't need no mirror reflection. You know your hearts are beating fine. Ganja swirling in the air. Keep meditating in love. Rasta color everywhere. And we can rise above. I just think it was really well done. This is very different than what I usually see from Lockdown Larks. A lot of his are more, I guess I shouldn't say, but it strikes me as more of a love poem or love lyric. And this is a love all its own in the way that he did it. But definitely it's a good reflection of Bob Marley. So nicely done, Lockdown Larks, and thank you so much for sharing with us tonight. Nicely written.
Nice, Gene. Thank you. Zach, how about you?
I thought it was awesome. I thought it was a breath of fresh air after the last piece. A very well-written sort of ode to Bob Marley and the Almighty Reefer.
The Almighty Reefer.
Yeah, over and throughout.
Jobless man, you know.
It's great. Well done.
Thank you, Zach. And Dan, you got the read. How about you?
It's like a song, isn't it? This would make a great song. I think Bob himself would be proud of this. You know, you have no idea how hard it was for me to actually not read this in a Jamaican accent. I had to resist. You know, I thought that wasn't appropriate. You know. But yeah, I loved it actually. It's really good. It flows really nice, and and I love the repetition of the chorus. And yeah, it was great. I would like to make this into a song. You know, if we could find I think we could find a reggae artist to actually make this into a song for us.
Because he does have that chorus going through. Yeah. The ganja swirling in the air, keep meditating alone, rock the color everywhere.
You can get someone on Fiverr to perform it for you for like 20, 30 quid. You know what I mean? Or dollars, whatever. Yeah.
Excellent.
You'd be able to find a reggae artist, you know what I mean, for like 20 or 30 pounds. They'll do it for you. You know what I mean?
That's
it would make a great song. It's a shame for it not to ever make to be a song, because it's really great lyrics.
Absolutely. This was done with a dip into Bob Marley and his life and what he believed in, because he did die young. It all started with a bit of cancer in his toe, and he went with the healing thought of the Rasta way and the natural herbs and such. And yet he kept performing, just like Freddie Mercury did up until his death. I mean, his last concert, he finished out, I think it was in the U.S. He went over to Sweden, I think, or Switzerland to see about some alternative health care. And he died on the plane on his way home, unfortunately. And he was all about that note to love, world peace, he was that leader back in the day when it comes to walking a different line and how the people should all get along. And
yeah,
that's all he missed, even all these 40 years later.
I think one man created, he gained more respect than probably any other living person. It's no matter what music you're into, everybody loves Bob Marley. You know what I mean? Doesn't matter if you're a metalhead or you're a raver. You know, everybody loves Bob Marley. So,
he brought that reggae style into mainstream music with a touch of country, but also rock and roll. So it hit all the right flavors in the moment, and it brought a huge audience to him.
Yeah. Yeah, and the rebel songs and the rebellion in them, and that was appealing to people as well, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well done, Lars. Yeah. Thank you very much. All right, Dean. We still got a few minutes left.
And the last piece for tonight, I think, unless we can get you guys, I can con you guys into sticking around for one more. This is called Cruelty and Strength by Dan Machine. And Rex, I'm going to have you read this one.
Okay. Let's see. All right. Frailty and Strength by Daniel DeCino. I cannot see the sky without the sun to brighten the world. I do not walk the earth without the earth pulling me in, unrelenting, wanting, unrelenting, passion for my return to the earth within. A thought, just the body breathing an image, imagination as the body burns, a constant phoenix, strength of mind ignition. I walk with running force of time, breath of hurricane stills my lungs, and earthquakes tremble at my coming steps, mountains in submission under the feet of my climb. Deep inside, as cells divide, death and frailty within, I hide my hands as fist may fight with pride, strengthen and frailty, twin wings will glide. The fate of the path is to end in nothingness, with even circles as rebirth and death. I am nothing but frailty. With frailty, I am nothing. And my heart, and its frantic, never-ending struggle for rhythm, submits to the mind of control for passion, and the blood beat emotes through me, lightning bolt angry at the sky, to quietly cool it in with rain. And I have strength to protect, and I have strength to grasp and consume to be me, and I have strength to submit to the love of all I see. End poem. Zach, why don't we start with you, please?
Sure. It was just propulsive throughout. Lots of fiery celestial imagery, especially with the body breathing the image into the phoenix. You kind of see the outline, kind of like running full speed. Just like through time, I guess. Speed of time or whatever you want to call it, like H.G. Wells. It was very cool. And it kind of just fades into nothing a little bit, back into that singularity, and back into the sky. So it's like back and forth, zigzagging over the place, but in a very believable way, and not like in a way that's disjointed, but easy to follow. So I thought that was cool.
Thank you, Zach. And Dan, how about you?
Yeah, it was great. I liked it. The first line was great. Cannot see the sky without the sun to brighten the world. That was set the tone for the piece straight away. And then the unrelenting one thing. I had a really good thought in my head, but it's gone now.
Oh, I understand that. How about you, Gene?
Ooh. Well, I think I have an answer. I thought this was a wonderful write by Dan. First off, oh, wait, am I on mute? Wait, let me check. Oh, my God, I'm not. 2 for 2. I enjoyed the piece very much. I think that we all grow stronger in the face of adversity, and I find that that statement was well reflected in this piece by Dan. You know, you start out, you're frail, and, you know, but every time you take another blow from good old life, as we talked about long ago, each blow we take just makes us stronger in some way. You know, we stand a little taller. It's one of two things. Either we get stronger or we get pulverized. So yeah. I think that he reflected the that strength that we do get better at as we go along for the most part. And a wonderful job, Dan. Dan always has some kind of underlying I don't know, just great thoughts in his pieces, I find. So wonderful job, Dan. Thanks for the share. Great job.
I remember what I was going to say now. The first stanza kind of speaks of a little bit of helplessness, like gravity. You know, it's like a force you can't do anything about. You know, the earth pulling me in. And it kind of seems a little helpless, that first stanza, like he's feeling desperate or something. You know what I mean? That's what I was going to say. I remembered now. Sorry. Just not having a good day today.
I like that. Nice. I was walking along that same line until I got that three-liner. Unrelenting passion for my return to the earth within. There is a note of being born, and in being born, you live to die, so you return back to the earth. That three-line touch right there. And then the very next one, a thought, just the body breathing, an image, an imagination, the body burns, a constant phoenix, strength of mind, ignition. That hits on the growth in man at a certain age, from say 20s to 40s. You've got this brilliant, bright image of who and what you are and what you should be. The strength of mind ignition offers up that note to everything you put forth in your life to birth new things, so to speak. That note in the next one, I walk with running force of time, breath of hurricane, so my lungs. There is a strength and solitude in that note of who and what you are as youthfulness walks strong and hard. Death cannot touch me, so to speak. And the fact that it hits on the idea of death and frailty within as cells divide. Yes, we are born to live, and we live to die. That note walks in there. I hide my hands as fists, make fight with pride, strength and frailty, twin wings will glide. The idea, instead of fighting in the moment, the idea of looking to spread your wings and fly, open up to the naturalness of what you can offer up rather than fighting in the moment. And what else we got? I am nothing but frailty. With frailty, I am nothing. Duality in that. We understand that we are frail beings, and that note to death may come at any second. The heart, that struggle for rhythm. There's a note there of getting on in age. As we get on in age, the heart slows down a bit. We have those imperfect beats. Maybe a heart attack walks in. And that lightning bolt, angry at the sky, to quietly cool it with rain, kind of hits that idea of all of a sudden you've gotten that note of a heart attack, which takes you down. And then to finish out it, and I have strength to protect, and I have strength to grasp and assume to be me, and I have strength to submit for the love of all I see, offering up those notes of walking a path which speaks larger of yourself than you yourself speak in the moment. So, nicely done, Daniel. And that brings us back to you.
Well, guys, listen, I have one more on the board. Just one, and it's short.
Okay.
You think we can...
Real loss.
Let's do it.
This is called In the Bog by Darkened Auras. And I'm going to give it a read. Oh, my God. In the Bog by Darkened Auras. She sat in the old hollowed-out tree, inciting a chant to capture those free. Wandering souls pleats for escape, as across her palm a sharp blade scrapes. Skull and bones of every sort decorate her swamp, her bog resort. From a goblet she begins to ingest. The blood dribbles down her neck and chest. Candle flames are flickering all around. The air is now dead. There's not a sound. She looks straight ahead, gives a disturbing smile. She's been staring at you now for quite a while. End poem.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. And Dan, why don't we hit it off with you? What do you think?
This is great. Like fantasy piece here. I loved it. Kind of reminds me of one of the sort of MMO kind of games, you know, like a dark one of the darker ones. You know what I mean? Wonderful wording as well. The skull and bones of every sort decorate a swamp. Really creates an image of a quite a dark place you don't really want to be. You know what I mean? You don't want to end up there, do you? yeah, candle flame sticking around the air, it's dead, not a sound. Kind of speaks of a kind of musty kind of swamp or something to me. Do you know what I mean? Like, I liked it. I liked it. Very well written, I thought.
Excellent. Thank you, Daniel. Zach, how about you?
I was reminded of Robert Eggers' The Witch. Definitely The Witch Sitting on the Tree, except, like, it's different than The Witch, but very much similar. Someone gets witched, blood dribbling down her neck and chest. I was just thinking about that a little bit, poison apple types of things. Disturbing. Yeah, I thought it was great.
Nice. Thank you, Zach. Me, the image we've drawn out with this was kind of like The Legend of Sleepy Hollow with Johnny Depp, when they had that big tree that was swallowing up people, and they got two-faced into the tree, and then at the roots you saw the blood as the ooze that fed the tree itself. I like that thought. So, nicely done, Christina. Thank you very much. And Jean, we'll turn it back to you.
Okay, well, I'm going to give a quick comment on this, and then I'm going to say goodbye. It was a great dark brevity, great rhyme and meter, and a nice take on that prompt. I enjoyed that watch over your shoulder ending. You know, he's been watching you for quite a while. Kind of makes you go, like, where are they? You know, that's kind of the way I felt that. So, well, excellent job, Christina, and thank you so much for sharing with us, as always. Much appreciated. Yeah, so thank you, everybody, for joining me tonight. And Rex, thank you so much for co-hosting with me. Someday I'm going to have a voice for 2 hours straight. No question. No
sorry for the technical issues earlier, by the way.
My technical issues are built in. That's the sad part. But,
I've not had a good night with the technical issues.
Yeah, right. It's, you know, it's always something with me. I don't know. It's a Friday night thing, I think. But I want to thank
my headset
Naomi
as well.
Yeah, see? It's a whole mess.
Happy Friday.
That's all. Yeah. It's two shop. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, kids with the small stuff. That's what they say. Thank you, Naomi,
really
for calling in. Everyone on the board. And thank you guys for calling in. It was great hanging out with you all. Great reads, Dan and Zach. As always, Rex, you know. And shall we meet again next Friday? Perhaps. That'll be nice.
Yeah.
Anyway, you
nice.
All take care of yourself and enjoy it.
Good night.
I'll be putting up a new passport because we have nothing on it. Good night. Take care.
Good night, Dan. Thank you.
Good night.
Bye.